Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 162 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. It's a fresh episode. If you remember, the last episode was a pre-recorded one and it was of our TV show, the same content, because I had to go away. Well, I'm back now and it's been like a month since we made a fresh episode and there's a lot going on. So it's going to be, could be a long one. So we'll see. But today we are drawing the winner of the Best Day Ever contest. I'm going to show you that, that actual video of us doing the draw. The Yukon Territory fights back against liberal gun grabs, similar to Saskatchewan and Alberta. That's kind of interesting. Anti-gun groups have been using liberal government money, aka tax dollars, to lobby for Bill C-21. That's an interesting story as well. Pretty nice, right? And a whole lot more, including an interesting story in the outro at the very end of my trip to Europe. There's a wild story I want to share with you, but I'm going to keep that to the end. Anyway, as soon as we hear from our sponsors, we'll get started. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we are back. So the very first thing that we're going to do is we are going to draw the winner for the CCFR's Best Day Ever contest. And so I'm just basically playing the clip that I put together for television so that it's pretty abbreviated. So I'm just going to leave it at that. We'll watch this clip and then I'll be back after that with the podcast content. Okay, so hang with me. All right. Here's how this is going to work. We do all of our draws by using this website called random.org. This is what you see here on the left-hand side of your screen. And basically, random.org has this random number generator. It randomizes numbers based on noise in the Earth's atmosphere or something like that. You can read about it yourself, but this is what we've been using forever. The number generator, we just put the first number in the in this spot and the last number in this spot, and it will generate a number throughout that number range. So on the right-hand side, you have the spreadsheet, which everyone appears on. I think this is the order of when their donations were received. I think that's how that works. What we're going to do is we're going to put the first number in, which is row number 2. So we're going to put that in there. And we're going to find out how many rows in this spreadsheet. And we're going to go down to 8759. All right. So now we've got the number range. Let's double check that to make sure it's good. And we're going to hit this button 3 times. So the first button hit is going to be for the grand prize. The second button hits are going to be for the runner-up prizes. All right. So let's find out who won the grand prize of the CCFR's Best Day Ever contest. And it is $6,190. And we're only going to expose the name of the winner. $6,190 is, let's double check, yeah. Jeremy Johnson from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Congratulations, Jeremy. That's awesome. You are going to be on your way to Calgary, Alberta, to spend 10 grand, hang out with us, and shoot a bunch of guns. So thanks so much for entering. We're going to hit this button two more times. Let's hit it again. $39.49. So we're going to go up to line $39.49. $39.49 is David Meese from Edmonton, Alberta. David, congratulations. You won a great big neon sign. All right, one more time. $55.78. Okay, just want to make sure I don't say the wrong person. So our good friend Anthony Novosat from Thunder Bay, Ontario. Anthony, you have won a neon sign. All right, so we're going to try to give our grand prize winner, Jeremy Johnson from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. We're going to try to give him a call. So let's see if he's around.
Hello.
Hi, Jeremy.
Yes.
This is Rod Giltacka from the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights calling.
Hey, Rod.
How are you?
I'm good.
Hey, Jeremy, I have some good news for you, my friend.
Well, I think I know what that would be.
Well, you are the grand prize winner of our contest.
No way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yes, way, man.
Awesome.
So you're going to be going to Calgary to spend 10 grand and do a bunch of shooting?
Cool.
And Ms. Wilson and myself will meet you there.
Awesome. That's right on. No, really, good news.
It was a bit of a shocker, right? I probably caught you off guard.
I entered the contest and stuff, but never, I just like helping out.
Well, I have to tell you, I really appreciate the help. And and I'm glad you won, man.
Oh, me too. That's awesome.
All right. Well, there you have it. I know I just said it, but I want to say it one more time, how appreciative we are for all of your support in the contest and of the CCFR. I can't tell you how meaningful it is because we try to do a lot of big things and we've done a lot of big things at the CCFR and we couldn't do that. We couldn't be the organization that we are without all of you supporting us, all the support that we get from the community. So I can't thank you enough for that. Okay. Even just as from one gun owner to another. So I just want to say that again. You're probably tired of hearing that, but anyway, I got to get it off my chest. How about that? All right. So I've got a couple of personal things I want to share with you. I'm going to make that really quick because it's not news. And then I only have one actual, kind of news item to share with you before we bring Tracy on. So Scott Carpenter of International Shooting Supplies, who is currently the president of the CCFR, stopped by yesterday morning. I had to split the filming of this episode into a couple of different parts. I got some construction going on outside the office too. Hopefully you can't hear that, but it's ringing around in here. It's a little distracting. But Scott stopped by with a new rifle for me to take on that spring bear hunt that I'm going on. And so I took some pictures of it with my phone. Check it out. So this is a Howa 1500 ultralight package. I think it's a carbon fiber stock that's rubberized with, I think that's what, Vertix? Isn't that what it's, that camo pattern's called? I can't remember. But it's in 308 and it's a really nice little package. And obviously I have to pay for this stuff myself, but Scott gave me a really good price. So I appreciate that. So thanks Scott over at International Shooting Supplies for that. And I also want to mention that I did complete my core this past Sunday, and I did it with our friends over at BC Firearms Academy, and the course was taught by Eric Beer over there. And so thank you, Eric. You did a great job. Apparently, he tells me I got 100% on the exam. I think Eric is spreading misinformation, though he did have the template over top. But let me tell you this, because I don't know anything about hunting, right? Let me tell you this. I'm glad I'm going on a guided hunt for my very first one because, I feel a little shaky, and I think that's the case when the first time you do anything. So I just thought I'd share that. So I'm going to be a licensed hunter. I just got to take the paperwork in to the BC Wildlife Federation and then over to Service BC, and I'll have my hunter's number and I can buy a species license. Pretty exciting stuff. All right, so let's move on now. So one news item that I wanted to cover before we bring Tracy Wilson on is this one. Now, you may have seen this video floating around that I'm going to talk about. Pierre Poilievre tweeted it and then tweeted criticism at the Liberal government for their failure in public safety and their attack on exclusively licensed gun owners. So this shooting, presumably a gang shooting, took place in White Rock, British Columbia. Now, I know I'm familiar with White Rock because I used to hang around there like in the late 80s, early 90s when I was a young man, a strapping young lad. It used to be an interesting place because they had an oceanfront community and a really nice pier, and there's nightclubs and restaurants. It's quite a happening spot. And at the same time, when you got away from the ocean, the rest of White Rock was known as a sleepy retirement community. But all in all, like a pretty quiet place. Well, apparently it's not quiet anymore. Now they have gang shootings. Now, you may have seen this video floating around, but this is a shooting with a fully automatic rifle with presumably a drum mag or something like that. We're going to go down an interesting road with this. So number one, this is an unbelievable public safety hazard. Obviously, it wasn't addressed by Bill C-71, Bill C-21, the so-called assault-style weapons ban, the handgun freeze, any of the amendments that made it and didn't make it through into Bill C-21, and all of the Liberal Party rhetoric didn't stop that from happening. And that's a type of firearm that has been banned in Canada since 1977, right? But just sidestep all of that stuff, because criminals will get a hold of these firearms, whatever firearm they want. Doesn't matter what they want, they can get a hold of it by either illegally importing it from anywhere in the world or manufacturing them themselves. Like they'll go where they have to go to get this stuff. Okay, so, and that's the reality, right? That's anyone that knows anything knows that's true. So anyway, the reason why I'm bringing this up is when things like this, when you ignore firearm-related violence, you attack only licensed gun owners because it's politically convenient for you. This is the stuff that continues to happen and in this case has escalated to the point of full autos. But wait, it gets actually worse. So coming from a training background in this sort of context, as it were, law enforcement, it's if you look at this and you can see that this is a criminal with no firearms experience, a novice as well, and they probably have never operated a firearm like this in their lives. And the problem is, not only is it just a public safety hazard from the two cars that this individual is engaging, but check this out. So Buddy comes around the hedge. He lights up both of these cars. The one car starts moving, and he gets hyper-focused on it, and he starts tracking the car, and look where his muzzle's going. All the way around, he's tracking the car because he's hyper-focused on it, and he's putting rounds down past his buddy. It's a miracle that his buddy is still alive. And so not only did he not just shoot the people he was there to shoot, he sprayed bullets down the street into other houses. These things are skipping off of car parts, are skipping off the concrete, off of posts, you know, metal posts, who knows? And bullets are going stinking everywhere. I don't know what time of the night this was, but anybody walking around could have been struck several times. Like the level of impact to public safety that something like this has is immeasurable. Okay. Now, let me pivot to something else. I'm one of those people that is not against the militarization of the police. If you expect police to intervene in something like this, had they been around, but at the same time, you expect them only to show up with a handgun, I don't know what to say, right? Police need the proper tools for the jobs. Police need rifles and they need semi-autos, probably not full autos, because something like what you just watched could happen because police get a certain amount of experience and training with firearms, but it's not infinite unless they do it themselves. And most police don't. Many do, but most police don't. So anyway, if you're going to expect police to intervene on behalf of public safety in situations like what you just watched, they have to have the tools for the job. Even just in regular day-to-day policing where a firearm would be necessary, a rifle is better than a handgun, even at close range. So it's just better for public safety because bullets are going to go where you want them to go, not all over the place. And when it comes to long range situations, police don't have to get that close to an issue to solve the problem. They can stay back a ways, which keeps them safer and they're firing accurate rounds. So anyway, the reason why I brought this up, now this is interesting, is you can always depend on the deranged folks over at the Canadian Doctors for Protection from Guns to wade into something, as they've been doing for, I don't know, 5-6 years now, wade into something they know nothing about, but want to express an opinion and get it out there. Let people know what experts they are. So check out this tweet. So the docs have retweeted a post from the Coalition for Gun Control, and it relates to a story. It says, a risk to public safety. Police issued firearms stolen from a vehicle near Barrie, Ontario, I would imagine. And they retweet that with their own comment. It says, perhaps a review of why and when police have access to such weapons is in order. And so I don't want to go on and on about it, but the level of stupidity, the level of ignorance and arrogance and narcissism that it takes to wade into something like this with knowing absolutely, like, they know less than nothing about these kinds of things. They don't know anything at all, right? They know how to repair bullet holes in human beings. But that's where it stops. And everybody knows that except them for some reason. Everybody acknowledges that. Do you think I'm going to give advice, medical advice? Do you think I'm going to say to you, hey, if you get shot, just come to me. Don't worry about the doctors. They don't know anything. They're NRA-inspired style doctors. Come to me. And me know nothing about it. Of course I'm not going to do that, right? Because I'm not a narcissist. So anyway, it's fascinating to me that you look at something like that shooting, that full auto shooting, where dude is not even just shooting his people that he wants to, you know, whack or whatever. This guy's firing full auto bullets everywhere all over the neighborhood. And these people would expect a police officer to intervene. And they're like, oh, police shouldn't even have guns, right? I guess that's the implication. It should be like Britain, right? Like London, where the cops don't even have guns there, you know? The disconnect from reality is just astounding. Like, it's profound. Their ignorance is profound. And, you know, it's funny. I would like to give a message to the Doctors for Protection from Guns. You know what? If you want to intervene yourself physically and increase public safety and stop something like what you just watched in that video yourself, and you want to go and do that with a taser or a baton, then I will be there to provide moral support for you, probably around 600 meters away behind cover, but I'm fully supportive of you doing that. You know, just as long as it's somebody else's life, it's no problem, right? Yo, you don't need a gun. Just, it's really something. They're quite a group of people. Just astounding. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that to your attention because that's the kind of stuff that ends up floating across our feed, right? Like, how is this even possible? But anyway, hopefully you got at least got a little bit of a laugh out of it because it is a very unserious Twitter feed. Okay, that's all I got. Let's bring Tracy Wilson on. Oh, sorry. Don't forget, if you want to hear a couple of really, really great stories that I saved for the outro, don't forget to watch them in there. Don't just click off when I say that's it for this episode or whatever. There's a couple of things in there worth watching. Anyway, Tracy Wilson. All right, we are back with Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
I've heard that a lot the last few weeks.
Yeah. Well, both of us, right?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. All right. We have so much stuff to go through. I know I say that in every single episode, but we got to get cracking on it right away. So first story that we want to report on is the Durham by-election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my good friend Jamil Giovanni, actually, he is a former broadcaster from Ontario. And he was on the CFRA show. He had a show there, got fired. It was this great big thing. He was discriminated against for being a conservative of color. And there's just been a whole background on that. Anyways, he ran for the conservative nomination in Durham. Now, you'll remember that is the riding that Erin O'Toole retired from. There was another guy who ran against him for the nomination, but he was disqualified, Robert Rock. But never fear, he came back as a Liberal candidate. They had their recent by-election. And, of course, Jamil Giovanni won it by a bigger margin than has ever been seen in the last 20 years since the CPC merged. So just a resounding success for Jamil Giovanni. I think he's going to serve the people of Durham well here in Ottawa. And we sent him a big congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's a good indicator of things to come.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Next story. It's funny about Robert Rock, though, by the way, right? If I can't win as a conservative, I'll run as a Liberal. And then I remember sorry to jump back to that story, but the whole Liberal front bench, like all Liberal ministers went to Durham and all campaigned for him. And talked about him like he's like, so his Liberal values. And it was like, you were hoping to be conservative like a few months ago.
Yeah. Like he literally just got, you know, declined by the conservatives. So they're sort of picking up the leftovers and presenting him as the guy. But yeah, he, you know, as Robert Rock hit rock bottom. So that's the way it went. But never fear. He's still got a job because he is a Durham city councilor. So either way, he's got a taxpayer-funded job. He'll be okay.
Yeah, but he's trying to get that federal pension, right? Because it's a...
Oh, yes.
It's a goodie.
It is a goodie.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, let's move on. Yukon Firearms Act. So the Yukon is... the opposition party, I think, up there is trying to create a firearms act very much like Alberta and Saskatchewan. That's what it is. To try to protect the residents of their province, to protect their personal property from the feds.
Yeah, that's right. So the Yukon Party is the opposition party, and they've been pushing really hard with the Yukon Liberals to get them to institute the same type of law that legislation that we've seen in these other provinces. There's two main components to it. Number one, they would regulate and license confiscators. So basically, if the Liberal government ever does get around to kicking in our doors and taking our stuff, nobody in Yukon would be able to do that without being licensed by the province, which, of course, would probably never be issued. And number two, they're looking for their own provincially appointed CFO. So they're still one of those provinces that doesn't have their own. And then, of course, there was a lot of information in there that they would also consult with hunters and Indigenous communities and just experts in the north, because they have the largest number of wilderness carry permits in that province, and they want to protect that. So all that to say, we'll see what happens in the coming months with that. But there has been some positive reaction from the Yukon Liberal Party. So, yeah, stay tuned for more. But lots of really great people in our community pushing hard on that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So in that way, I think it's similar when they're saying, like, well, you have to have a license to be a confiscation agent of firearms. And we're not sure whether or not we'll issue that license. That's what they would call in the United States may issue, not shall issue.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anyway. I don't want to call it a roadblock, but it would definitely block the road.
Yeah. Anyway, it's all fun and games when you're the federal government and you can just push down whatever you like until people start resisting. And I think any reasonable federal government would maybe stop for a second and go, wait a minute. Are we on the wrong side of this thing, but not this government? So
not this government.
We'll see.
No.
Yeah. All right. On to the next thing. We got lots of interesting stuff we're talking about actually today.
We're all over the place.
This one is another good one. So New Zealand is the new kind of political landscape there. The new government, I guess, is considering rolling back some of those gun bans, or at least reviewing all of that firearm related legislation that was rolled out by Jacinda Ardern back in the day that Justin Trudeau just thinks is the greatest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny watching all the lefties or the liberals and the anti-gun groups hold up New Zealand as their, you know, their thing to go by. But it's interesting because Jacinda Ardern's former Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern's law has had 5 years of history behind it. 50,000 rifles were confiscated from legal owners. And believe it or not, gang violence is up 33%. Across the country. So her party was decimated in the last election. The other two parties have sort of formed a coalition. Ardern's party went from 122 seats down to 65. So there is political consequences to attacking people that don't deserve it. So everyone should take note of that. But yeah, so they are currently studying rolling all that stuff back. It's been a complete and massive failure on public safety and on people's property rights. So I'm holding out hope for the people of New Zealand that their new government, does them right.
Well, once again, more guns doesn't equal more death. Yet again, I mean, more evidence. But hey, why let the facts get in your way of a great narrative, Doctors for Protection from Guns? Anyway, I think that's an interesting story, but I think it's similar as the Yukon story, which is none of that stuff is done yet. There's just a lot of talk about it, and we'll definitely let people know if that actually happens, which would be great.
Oh yeah, we'll follow it closely.
Okay, mm-hmm. So cool story. We ended up getting a media request a couple of weeks ago. I think it's been a couple of weeks already. Maybe by the time people are watching, it could be 2 or 3 weeks. And I was out of the country. I was off the continent. And and you were here. And the media request was from the Evan Bray Show in Saskatchewan. And the reason why we're going to talk about this and it's significant is Evan Bray is the ex-chief of police of Regina, Saskatchewan, and he was a very influential law enforcement officer who played a role in the hearings for Bill C-21, both in the House and in the Senate, I believe. And he had a fairly even-keeled approach to it, saying that it's very clear that licensed gun owners aren't the reason we have firearm-related violence. And while everyone else, like, police want this law, police agree that less guns equals more death, and we should, you know, they believe in our handgun ban, all the rest of this garbage. And then you actually have the actual police saying, no, that's not the problem, by the way. So anyway, so he's got a new radio show, and he was looking for an interview, which would have been really great. I would have loved to do it, but I was out, so you had to do it. And you have a little interesting little story of a real life. This is the real day in the life of the CCFR.
Yeah, so I've been bouncing around all over the place. As everyone knows, I was in Nashville, and then I was out in BC with the Wild Sheep. And I was getting ready because you and I were going to fly from opposite ends of the country and meet in Saskatoon to go do this Saskatoon Wildlife Association show. So Evan Bray, who took over the old Gormley show on the radio, and he does a great job, by the way, he's got such a great voice. They contacted us and said, would you like to do an interview? And this was probably 2 weeks before we were heading out there. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. You know, you were in Europe, you would still be in Europe, so that would be fine. So, you know, I said, yeah, I'm in. But I never put it in my calendar. So here I am getting ready to go to Saskatoon. I'm getting my stuff packed up. And, you know, as a lady, I looked at myself and I'm like, I need a little self-care. It's time to go to the nail salon. So I head over to the nail salon. I'm getting my nails done, and I can hear my phone ringing in my purse. And I'm trying to ignore it, but it's ringing and ringing. And I'm like, what is that? Anyways, I look at it, and it says Chorus Media. And that's what it says when the radio calls you. And I went, oh, no, I got my interview with Evan Bray. I can't believe I did that, right? So here I am, literally. I've got my phone. I answer it. I've got, you know, my hands in someone else's hand. He's still working on my nails. Shout out to my buddy Bosco at Barhaven Regal Nails, because he did a wonderful job. And I said to him, they put me on hold for a minute before you go live. And I'm like, I have to do a live radio spot. And he's like, okay. And he's still filing away at my nails. And I'm like, it's really noisy here. So he goes and closes the shop doors to the mall so that we don't hear all the noise from the mall. And there's ladies in there getting their nails done and their toes done. And here I can't be quiet. I have to be on live radio. So I do the whole radio interview. It was like 12 minutes long. It was a great interview considering I'm doing this, like literally with my phone. And then when I was done, I wanted to apologize to everyone in the salon because it's my own stupidity for not booking that time off and just doing it at home. So I stood up to turn around and apologize to everyone. And all the ladies start clapping and they're like, yes. And my nail guy comes over and gives me a hug. But it was just so cute that he literally closed his own shop doors when customers could be coming in just to give me that opportunity to have a quiet space. And to me, it sort of reflects how everyday people who aren't part of our community are really waking up to the truth about our topics. So yeah. Anyways, it was just kind of funny, but the interview went fine. So,
well, and that's an awesome story. But I think it's also an example of when people hear the other side of the story, it sounds a lot more reasonable than when they listen to the one side of the story that's typically portrayed by mainstream media. And they're like, yeah, who needs a gun? And you hear the other side and you're like, oh, that's actually fairly reasonable. You know what I mean? Like that.
Well, that's it.
And that's why the work that the CCFR does in mainstream media, like we do a lot of interviews. We've provided a lot more mainstream media exposure than I think gun owners have ever had in the past. And why that, even though they're just tiny spots, and even though anti-gun groups and the government get 10 times as many spots as we do, that work is really important because you have people that listen to the other side of the story. They're like, oh, okay, so the gun owners really aren't that unreasonable. I can see why they're angry. You know, that kind of thing, right? It's important.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, you know, it's different if I'm in my own house or in a room full of gun owners. Of course, everyone's going to agree with me, right? But I'm in a shop full of complete strangers and, you know, soccer moms and whatever. And yeah, they're cheering me on. They were all clapping. And I was like, Wow, that's awkward.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's a great story. Anyway, yeah, a little behind the scenes at the CCFR stuff. All right, let's move on. You know what? Oddly enough, that's never happened to me.
No way.
No, just you so far. Okay, let's move on. Now, interesting thing, when I attended as a participant with standing in the Mass Casualty Commission for the, you know, what happened in Nova Scotia in 2020, the CCFR was there, but also the Canadian or the Coalition for Gun Control, they were a participant as well. And also NAWL, which is the NAWL.
It's NAWL.
It's very similar to LAWL, but different, which is the National Association of Women and the Law. So it's a feminist group pushing for feminist legislation, I guess. And basically, these two groups were named participants as well in the Mass Casualty Commission for, I guess, I don't know why NAWL was there. I'm not sure what the point of that was, but the Coalition for Gun Control was certainly there to play a part in paving the way for the commission to be used as a tool by the Liberals to get Bill C-21, to create support for Bill C-21.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And the so-called assault-style weapons ban and the handgun freeze and all the other garbage that they've been up to. And it turns out that these guys, they applied for funding, and man, did they take a lot of funding for their role, which was no bigger than what the CCFR did. Anyway, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I think the Coalition for Gun Control got over $200,000, and NAWL got over $700,000. So you're talking almost $1 million to have them create this narrative. You know, it's like if you pay for the result you need, right? Like, you'll get it. So, yeah, it's interestingly enough, because a lot of their recommendations ended up in the final recommendation from the Mass Casualty Commission themselves. And
almost identical.
Stuff that would have absolutely not impacted that crime. But yet here we are, right? So,
Just wild. It's your tax dollars using to fund the assault on your own property. It's just interesting, right? You know, $1 million. And I'll tell you, and again, you know, like, we're completely transparent. The time that it took me, my involvement in the Mass Casualty Commission, you know, I had to read the materials, which took a while. I had to create a little report. I had to, and creating the report, it was quite short, because it really wasn't that complicated what happened there. And
well, it had nothing to do with our community. He wasn't a licensed gun owner, right? So.
And I don't know if I had hazard a guess, maybe 100 hours. At the most, 100 hours. And these people dragged out, the feminist group dragged out $700,000, almost $1 million by themselves of taxpayer money they got. Like, you can't tell me that they put that much work into it. You just can't tell me that. Like, I'd refuse to believe that. And then, and because how that's billed, and I don't want to, you know, get too far into the weeds here, but how that's billed is you hire people, and then you submit their time. So if this is a group of female lawyers or whatever, they just submitted hours like crazy, it seems. And then the Coalition for Gun Control, I could see the CCFR billing out 30 grand, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe 50 grand, maybe if we were paying ourselves big money. But the Coalition for Gun Control and just their yapping points, $206,000, like, I don't know, man.
I don't know.
It's, you know, they talk about people at the taxpayer trough. I don't know. That's quite a story. Anyway.
Well, it's an investment in a narrative, right? It was an investment for the government to be able to have that report and the recommendations within it. So they can be like, yeah, this, you know, even all these groups support us attacking licensed hunters and sport shooters instead of going after criminals. Like, it's, I don't know, man. This is where we are. It's almost like scammy, like a Rive scam.
Yeah.
Right?
I look at this like total corruption. All right. Our last story is a great one, which is our friends over at the Wild Sheep Society. I had to travel, and you attended on my behalf an event in Penticton, British Columbia, where we were honored with a spot to speak for their life members breakfast. And they raised a little bit of money for the CCFR. So give us the skinny on that.
Yeah, I mean, of all the times I get to steal your spot, this was a great one. So I went out, hung out with the Wild Sheep Society of BC in beautiful Penticton, British Columbia. They had a beautiful hunting expo going on there, all kinds of great stuff to see. And I was the keynote speaker at the Life Member Breakfast. And, you know, you think about Life Members, that's a big commitment. It's a lot of money and it's, you know, really shows your commitment. There was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people there. It was a massive breakfast. So it just goes to show how much support they're getting, right? Like they're really established, which is great. And they treated me like gold. They listened intently while I spoke, and I really appreciated the opportunity. And between a couple different fundraising avenues that they had worked on between some of the chapters and HQ, they managed to pull together roughly $50,000 for the CCFR. So that's, I just walked away from there just feeling so humbled and grateful. So I'm really, really happy for our relationship. And in fact, the CCFR is not only a life member of the Wild Sheep Society of BC, we're a Monarch member. So that's like a super duper life member. So yeah, really grateful for the partnership.
Yeah, that's awesome. They're a really great group of people. They've done a lot for the CCFR. So special thanks to Kyle Stelter and Mike Southern over at the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia. Really appreciate the help. Great people.
Yes.
You know, and forward thinking people, right? We're always trying to reach out to hunters. And that's those are the hardest core hunters there are.
They're hardcore.
Oh yeah, the wild sheep guys. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the big hunting. I'm, you know, my my spring bear hunt, first hunt of my life story, is one of the reasons I took that hunt is because I'm not going to have to climb any mountains to find bears. So these guys are tough guys. Anyway, thanks.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Anyway, thanks again, everyone, for all that help there at the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia. All right, we covered our list.
I think that's it.
We did it. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thanks for the update, Ms. Wilson, and I guess we'll see you in the next one.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right, so you made it through. Now we are in the outro, and I've got a couple of really cool stories to tell you. But one housekeeping item before I do that is Field Officer of the Month for January 2024. Is our great friend Matthew Shirley from Saskatchewan. So thank you, Matthew, for all your work. I just had the pleasure of hanging out at a booth in Saskatoon at a show with Matthew all weekend, and he does just a fantastic job. So very well-deserved Field Officer of the Month title. And as you may know, if you are named Field Officer of the Month, you get a $100 discount code for the CCFR online store, and you get a year's free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms, which is the newspaper that comes out monthly, and that is graciously donated by Donovan, the owner of CATF. So thank you for that, Donovan. Great guy, great publication. And unfortunately for Matthew, he's going to have to share the credit. I don't know about the prizes. Well, maybe the newspaper, but he'll have to share the credit with this with another team member at the booth at that show, and that is Thunder, the Shepherd Cross. I can't remember what the other part of Thunder is, but he is a great little guy, very well behaved. An absolutely adorable little puppy. And Thunder dragged a lot of people into the booth that probably wouldn't have visited us, which gave us an opportunity just to talk about the issue of legal firearm ownership and what the CCFR is doing to try to hold back the tide in awaiting an election, right? So thank you, Thunder, as well. Sorry, Matthew, it's just the way it is sometimes. Sometimes you win some, sometimes you lose some. So I guess he'll have to pay $50 worth of merchandise to Thunder to chew up or whatever from the CCFR online store. Okay, and before I talk about these two stories, congratulations again to our contest winner, Jeremy Johnson from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Thanks, Jeremy, for entering, and congratulations. We will see you in Calgary. All right, now I want to show you a shocking video, and I believe that that it's a result of overhunting of birds. It's an animal attack video. It's the birds fighting back. So what you're watching now is a turkey attack that took place in Quebec. And, you know, I'm thinking this kind of thing is going to happen more and more often. And if there was ever an argument for concealed carry in Canada, I think you're watching it right now. You know, if this guy had been carrying this, he wouldn't have had to run. He wouldn't have had to retreat. Because he shouldn't have to retreat. He should be able to stand his ground. But anyway, hopefully we don't see too much more of this. But anyway, I thought it was a funny video and would have turned out a lot different if this guy had thought ahead and was armed. But All right, now for the fun story. This is a story that's going to blow your mind. So I went to Europe just a couple of weeks ago, and my father died. He died in Montenegro, and that's where he was from. So I had to, this is in the former Yugoslavia, so I had to go there to kind of just make all these arrangements or whatever, right? And so I'd never been to Europe before. My wife never been to Europe. She really wanted to go. So I'm like, okay, we'll go. And then what we'll do is we'll fly through a couple of cities on our way there and turn it into like a halfway's holiday, right? Although I didn't have that much time. I think we were only spent 4 days, not in Montenegro. So the first place we went to was Amsterdam. Now, keep in mind, this is in February. This is the slow season. This is not the tourist season. It's cold. It's rainy. So there wasn't a lot of people there, which was fine by me because I don't like going in. I don't like any cities, much less big ones like Amsterdam and highly populated ones. So because I used to travel for a living, I'm sick of travel, but I'm used to renting cars because all my, you know, my career was all in North America. So I always rent a car. So I rented a car there, which I found out pretty quickly was a mistake because just to park a car in a parking lot in Amsterdam was around $80 a day. And that was a decent price. If you parked it on the street, it was around $110 a day, $120. Anyway, the parking lot was €52. And to park on the street was something like €80 or something like that, right? So I'm like, okay. You know, and everybody gets around by bike or by train / trolley, right? So I'm like, okay. So I said to my wife, you know, I paid for the parking for one night. I'm like, okay, tomorrow we're taking the car back and we'll take the train back into town. So I said, if there's anything that you want to do that involves a car, we have to do it tomorrow morning. So she says, I want to go to this outlet mall. Now this mall was outside of town, like, I don't know, 30 minutes. And it's like in the country, like there's farmers fields and you know, big windmills everywhere, not the old style, like the new ones. And so we get up early, we get the car, we drive out to this mall. It is cold, it is raining, and it's an open air mall, okay? Open air malls are for California and Arizona, not for places like Vancouver, British Columbia. We have them here too. It's just ridiculous because it's raining all the time. So we go to this mall. Now this is was it a Wednesday or a Thursday? I don't know. It's a weekday at like 11, I don't know, 10 after 11 in the morning on a weekday. There's probably 20 people in this, and it's pouring rain, 20 people in this entire mall. Okay. There's nobody there in Amsterdam, Netherlands. So we cruise up there. I mean, we could park anywhere we wanted. Parking lot's empty. We start walking through these stores and I do my usual thing. I just follow her around. I mean, you know, it wasn't just my trip. So I got to do my duty. And she decides she wants to go in this other store. I followed her through, I don't know, about 15 stores. And she wants to go in the store. I said, you know what? There's a Starbucks right here. I'm going to go get a decaf because I'm bored. And, you know, I'll catch up with you. Fine. Off she goes into the store. I go into the Starbucks. There's nobody in there, probably about six people. I roll up to the counter. I'm like, hey, I'll have a decaf Americano, whatever, right? They give me my coffee. And I go over to, you know, make it up. They put the cream in there for you, by the way. They have to do it. They don't let you do it. You can only do the show. Anyway, weird Europe. And so I'm making my coffee, getting the lid and whatever. A dude rolls up to me. And he's like, hey, man, you know, thanks so much for your work. No lie. And my brain, like, just explodes, right? Like, that happens. I won't say all the time. That might be an overstatement. But constantly, you know, like, very, quite often, right? If I go into a Canadian Tire or a Cabela's or a sporting goods shop or anywhere, Tim Hortons, like, I'll always run into somebody. And so this guy rolls up. And I'm like, and my brain, I was almost lightheaded. And I'm like, I didn't even respond. I'm like, you got to be effing joking me. Amsterdam? And he's like, I know. And I'm like, what? And not only is this guy familiar with the CCFR and familiar with our work, but he served in the military with Tracy Wilson's husband, fiance, Colin. Yeah, no joke. And I'm like, I can't. I'm like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I just got a really great deal on some round trip tickets. My son and I are doing some biking. We're staying in hostels. We just whipped here and we're going to go home. And I'm like, and so And here's the guy right here, Jay Murray from Great Ape Empire. They have a retail store and they teach courses and whatnot. And like, I just couldn't believe it, you know? And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? I got to go, you know, I'll be right back. So I go and my wife is like, just, you know, getting ready to pay for her purchases. And I'm looking at her, I'm doing this. And she's like, what? And I'm like, mm-hmm. Yep. Just make your purchases. And so she pays for her stuff. I'm like, come with me. We walk over, walk into Starbucks. I roll up to this guy and introduce him to my wife. And she's like, you got to be kidding me. And I'm like, nope. Amsterdam, man. And not only just Amsterdam, but like, this is the part, I think this is the weirdest part of the whole story. On the other side of the world, in the Netherlands, in the middle of February, not in town where all the tourists are, half an hour outside of town at some obscure outlet mall where there's 20 people in the Starbucks that I decide to go in to get that coffee at the time that I was there to go in there. If I was there 40 minutes later, I never would have ran into them. That's the kind of stuff that you're like, what are the chances there? You know, I need a statistician for this stuff. It was like 30 billion to one. There's 8 billion people on the planet. And then, I don't know, maybe it's more. Maybe it's 100 billion to one, that the chance that I would have bumped into this guy, bumped into Jay. Anyway, wild. So anyway, I just had to share that story because it was, and no, I didn't buy a lottery ticket. All right, that's it for this episode 162 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks for hanging in with me to the end. Hopefully you enjoyed that story. I mean, even when I think about it, I start getting lightheaded. It's like, how is that even possible? But anyway, I had to pass that on. Anyway, thanks so much, everyone, for entering the contest. Thanks for your support. Truly appreciate it. If you want to become a member of the CCFR, you can do that at ccfr.ca. If you want to be a member of the Insiders Club, we have an Insiders meeting tonight. When I'm recording this, you have access to Tracy Wilson and myself once a month, and you need to donate $20 or more on a recurring basis to the CCFR. You're automatically inserted into the Insiders Club. Anyway, again, thanks for everything. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.